Voices of Women is a top radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Hello, I'm Chris Stainis, the host of Voices of Women on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm beginning to interview our presenters at our 20th Women of Wisdom Conference, so it's exciting to be doing that now and introducing you to all these wonderful women, women who have a purpose, have gifts to share with you. And today I'm talking to two women. It's going to be quite interesting. First, we'll talk about our body's wisdom, which is an aspect of the feminine within all of us. I think it's an aspect of the feminine. And it's not something we always pay attention to. Some people are born with this awareness of being an empath, and you can be trained into it, I believe. Or retrained, as everyone probably has this innate ability. It's just buried under years of ignoring what our body tells us. We're also going to talk about mindfulness, living in awareness, and consciously being fully alive. So my first guest is Eagle Spirit. She's a contemporary shaman from the East Coast of Canada who works with clients all over the world to help them reconnect to their most authentic self through soul retrievals, energetic balancing, and journeying. As a lifelong empath herself, she has learned how honoring the body's wisdom, and we're talking about the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual bodies, how they can lead to a more happy, healthy, and joy-filled life. Eagle Spirit leads private soul journeys and group spirit quest tours around the world. She has the ability to hold the sacred space that makes releasing long-held energetic blocks and old fears inevitable when you are with her. In the last 2 years, she has developed a unique program to help empaths and highly sensitive persons embrace their sensitivity so they can connect in healthy, meaningful ways with themselves and the community around them. And she'll be sharing this part of her program in her workshop at Women of Wisdom, which is called Women as Empaths Embracing Our Body's Wisdom. And so she'll be in Seattle in February 18th and February 2012. So welcome, Eagle Spirit, to Voices of Women.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'm so excited to be with you, and I can't wait for February.
Oh, I know. I can't wait to meet you, too. it's going to be fun. So I'd like to start with you sharing your journey of how you discovered your gifts of being a healer and an empath. Did you know since you were a baby, or, you know, how did this all start?
Well, it's an excellent question because, like many other empaths, I didn't have a word for what my sensitivities were. And so by age 8, I was told by my mother to stop telling people things, you know, being aware. And as a child, I was clairvoyant. I was also clairaudient. So telling the kids what was going to happen at school, and, well, that was starting to freak out the adults. So the rest of my childhood, I was trying to suppress that information, and that caused a lot of health issues and stress-related issues. I tried alcohol to suppress it. I tried being an overachiever to suppress that information, but eventually, thank goodness, it's very hard to hide from who you are. And from my own personal journey of well-being, dealing with cancer and heart disease and two very, very serious car accidents, I realized how lucky I am to be alive, and if I could embrace who I was, that I came with a purpose, which I really believe is to help teach others how wonderful they are. And I did that in the business world, but it became a personal quest of mine to do it in the healing modalities as well. So it was a matter of remembering who I was, and in turn, that's what I help others with now.
Yeah, that's so true about how we're taught to suppress it. And I think out of probably fear, because our parents, they don't even, back in that generation, they didn't even understand what it was. And if you're seeing things and talking about it, they're probably more worried about, well, what are others going to say? You're going to freak people out.
Exactly. Well, especially because for an empath, when an empath gets what I call energetic cues, we're aware of things happening on the emotional level, on the physical level, mental, spiritual levels. So someone's words may say one thing, but what they're saying energetically is something very different. And it can be quite confusing for a sensitive child, for example. And you're seeing more and more of those these days with the indigo children and the crystal children. But we didn't have a language for this. So what do we do with it? So with my own personal journey of over 40 years now, looking at how to embrace my own sensitivities and what worked and what didn't. And I have to tell you, one of the things that I found didn't work so well was the recommendation that I protect myself, that I get a thick skin. And I have clients say that to me, well, can I turn it off? Can I just, you know, maybe if I just protect myself more, then I won't feel this information that's coming to me. And I just have to say, it doesn't work.
So you still feel it?
Oh, definitely. But the difference is, it's what helps make me successful in the work that I do. And I think that having those energetic cues, understanding them, for example, if I get a physical pain, being able to stop and say, okay, well, discern, is this mine or is it somebody else's? And then knowing what to do with it is so much more empowering than trying to numb the self and ignore the cues that are there. It's like an empath has the chance to live life in technicolor. We're not on automatic pilot when we become skilled empaths, and we don't ignore this beautiful technicolor world that's coming through energetic fields.
Well, and it's so true what you say of learning to discern whether it's, when you're feeling something in your body, to discern whether it's you or someone else, because empaths, being sensitive, you do pick up the energy. And so, mm-hmm. And I know this too. I'm like clairsentient, so I can feel it. I'll feel something. Mm-hmm. And I have to, and I've been trained too. So I know, okay, I just was with this person or I'm here in this situation. It's not me. And it's important to know when it is you, because you may be having a health issue that you have to deal with, but you almost have to train, because we're not taught this. It's not something we're trained in school or even from our parents of how to deal with this. And so that's the work you do. You help people to learn those cues.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's so helpful, and especially for empaths, because I really believe being an empath is a spiritual gift. And in your introduction, you said about, we all have this gift. I totally agree with you there. The difference is, though, most people aren't aware of it. And right. There's a small percentage, according to, for example, Rose Tree's work. She has a number of wonderful books. She has a website as well, so I totally recommend that to your listeners. From her research, she says that 5% of the population are empaths. Whether you call yourself an empath or a highly sensitive person, there are differences, and there's definitely differences between being an empath and being intuitive. But for an empath, it's just so important to understand those cues, because we have this overwhelming desire to be of service, to help others. But we have to be careful not to get caught up in that cycle of codependency where we're rushing around trying to make everyone else feel good, primarily because it'll make us feel better. So if we can discern what's ours, if something's not ours, we can take care of it. And what I do is help clients and participants in the Empath 101 deal with it on the four energetic levels. And then if it's not ours, we can either deal with it or clear it. And if it is ours, then take responsibility for it, get the information from the energetic cue, and release it. So you feel much happier, much healthier. There's improved creativity, easier focus, easier ability to hear your inner wisdom. Like, living balanced and aware, I think, is the key to success and to peace.
Yes, and this whole work that you're talking about, if you do ignore it, like you said, you've had serious illness. Yeah. Your body will go into illness, a disease. Yeah. It's dis-ease. You know, you're not
exactly
in ease, and you're taking on other people's energies or not good energies, you know, which is going to affect your body. It's going to affect your health. And so it is important, if especially if people are or feel that they're kind of this way, to find someone to train with.
Exactly. There's a very quick, simple example. There was a lovely lady. She's a grandmother, and she was babysitting her children. And she told the story about putting her granddaughter to bed, and her granddaughter had a horrible cold. Oh, sweetie, I just love to take that from you. You know, Grandma wishes you didn't have that. Well, her granddaughter woke up the next day, and she was fine. Grandma woke up. She was an empath. She had the cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to be mindful of our language and our thoughts and how to help others, and, you know, without putting ourselves up on a cross, you know?
Right. And when I've been trained too, it's the old way. The old shamans used to take on the illness, but they knew how to burn it off in themselves. But it's not, you get sick. You die from, you know, you can die from that. So you have to learn how not to take it on, thinking I'll heal the person by taking it off of them, and I'll take it. Well, you're just taking illness to yourself.
You're so right, Chris.
What is and you mentioned psychic, and is there a difference between, and just to let you know, we have a minute before we're going to go on break, but so if this is a longer topic, but the difference between being an empath and a psychic, is there any difference?
There is a very key difference, and I'll give you three key differences as a little teaser, and if we want, we can talk more about it after the break. But the three big differences are the experience of the energetic cue, the timing of it, and the accuracy. And the psychic, let's talk about experience. For a psychic, when they get information, what I call energetic cues, it's sort of like a sixth sense, sort of a flash of insight. There's very little emotional influence in it. It simply adds to the information that a psychic holds. Versus an empath, when they get the energetic cue, it's part of their spiritual experience, and it often moves them forward spiritually, giving them sort of like an aha moment. So one of the key differences is the experience of the information.
Well, that's interesting. So it's I'm not quite sure if I, and I wonder if our audience does too. So It takes it to the emotional level. So psychic, it's information, you can read it, but if the empath, it has the emotional element, so you're going to live this experience. But I wonder, I mean, I think psychics have a spiritual experience with it too, or maybe there's both, or some people have both.
Well, maybe when we come back from the break, we can talk a little bit more about the difference between the psychic and the empath. Does that sound like a plan?
That sounds like a plan. So this is Chris Danis. We're talking to Eagle Spirit. We'll take a break right now, and we'll come right back and talk more.
Transforming the world one listener at a time.
We all want deeper, more intimate relationships. But how do we create successful relationships and maintain strong connections? Peter Kane has some real answers. Author of The Monogamy Challenge, Creating and Keeping Intimacy, Peter is one of the original breathworkers and relationship trainers with over 30 years' experience. Breathe, relax, or create intimacy and keep it thriving. Visit peterkane.org or contact Peter Kane at 425-802-2050. Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
I was dealing with anxiety and depression, and nothing seemed to help me. Then I started to work with Dr. Schaub's Breakthrough Program. In just a few sessions, he helped me to finally understand and heal the deeper root cause of my challenges. As a result, I feel more centered and confident than ever before. And now I have the tools which will continue to support me throughout my life's journey. Dr. Schaub's approach has changed my life.
Hello, I'm Dr. Friedman Schaub, and I work with people across the globe to help them break through anxiety and depression and access their true potential. If you are ready to bring back confidence, joy, and meaning in your life, call us to schedule a free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. That's 866-903-6463. Or visit our website at cellularwisdom.com. That's cellularwisdom.com.
Imagine a chocolate so decadent that you'd never believe it could be good for you. Align your inner bliss with Mother Nature's magic. The power of cold-pressed cocoa by Shasai, the healthy chocolate. Shasai is everything you ever dreamed healthy should taste like. We combine unprocessed cocoa with acai and blueberry for an unbeatable high-oxidant powerhouse. Shasai, the healthy chocolate. Visit us at lifesaverchocolate.com or call 888-287-2011.
Dana's on Voices of Women, and I'm talking with Eagle Spirit, and we were just talking about the difference between psychic and empath and how there's an energetic cue. There's an experience on the emotional. So Eagle Spirit, can you tell us a little bit more about this empath?
Yeah, definitely. Well, we were talking about the difference between how an empath receives information and a psychic receives information. And this is really important when thinking about like an Empath 101 program. Not every empath is a psychic, and not every psychic is an empath. Most often, when a psychic gets information, it can be sort of a quick flash. They get, you know, that Colonel Mustard did it in the library with the candelabra, you know? But an empath, quite often, it takes a little while for the information to settle in. For example, an empath goes to a dinner party, and there's one person that they're really drawn to. And maybe it's they have a message for them, or that person has a message for them. There's an emotional sort of component to it. And this can happen because, unlike the psychic, the empath quite often is energetic merging. And most often, if they're not a skilled empath, they're doing it unconsciously. And what that means is, for example, you walk into a mall, you're happy, you've got a plan, you're going somewhere to pick something up, and within 5 minutes at the mall, all of a sudden you're overwhelmed with tiredness or with sadness or with anger, and you have no explanation why you're feeling that way. Chances are you've done an unconscious energetic merge. And so for an unskilled empath, going out in social situations can be really challenging for them. So they'll often avoid any sort of social interaction. And so, for example, an empath coming to the fair or coming to the expo in February, for an empath who's unskilled, that could be a little challenging in a group setting. And we want them to come and feel comfortable. And that's why learning how to understand and interpret the energetic cues rather than take them on and assume responsibility for them will make their lives so much easier.
Yeah, well, I totally relate to this because I remember going to the mall and being in tears. This is in my early 20s. I just didn't know how to deal with it. And, you know, I've been in you call it psychic training for years, but I relate to what you say about being an empath because it does take me longer to decipher the information. It sits, comes into me physically. Yeah. In an emotional level, it takes a while to fizz up to my brain to figure out, oh, that's what that's about. And I think when you know your process, it's easier to deal with. So I don't have to, and I'm sure you probably work with people like this, is like, I don't try to figure it out right away. Like, what's going on? What's going on? I just kind of go, you know what? I'll be aware of it when it's time for it to become conscious in me. And I allow myself that time because, I know it takes a certain amount of time for me. And the more you do it, maybe you find this too, the more I do it, the faster that time is.
Definitely. And I think the other thing that's important in the program is to understand that there are different types of empaths. So not every empath feels things on the emotional level. I would say in my experience, it's empaths dealing with things on a physical or emotional level. So that means they're getting a physical cue. For example, someone who's a medical intuitive quite often is an empath. I'd be an example of a physical empath. And so if they're standing in front of somebody who has illness, they may feel it register in their physical body. And same thing with the emotions. They may be around someone who puts on their mask and says, oh, yes, I'm fine. But you're with that person and you feel their sadness. But you see, there's also empaths that are intellectual empaths who are intellectual shapeshifters who can figure out quite complex thought patterns and processes just by being with another person. And there's also the spiritual empath. And so at the conference, we're going to talk more about that so people can identify themselves as, yes, indeed, either empaths, and not just a highly sensitive person, but a true empath, and then looking at what kind of empath they are and what that means for them so that, like you've done in your training, they can better understand themselves and their process.
Yes, it makes life a lot clearer for you.
Yeah.
You know, when you understand, oh, this isn't about me. I just walked, like you said, walking into a party and all of a sudden, well, you might feel depressed walking the door and like all of a sudden you're kind of, hey, I was having a good day till I walked into this room. And if you don't know what's going on, that can be very confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know I've had empaths say, you know, I have a challenge with this. Oh, life would be so much better if I just lived as a monk on the top of a mountain. And what you have to know is that isn't true. Because whether you're on the mountain or whether you're in the mall or whether you're at the conference, you can pick up energetic cues. So it's much healthier to learn how to discern them and what to do with them. And it's so much more rewarding.
And so what do you tell people to do with them?
Well, if, for example, it's theirs, then they can actually discern. I teach a process of discernment. So they can then find out that energetic cue. Is it coming from the physical body, the emotional, the mental, or the spiritual? Once they can pin down what it is, it's quite easy to process it through. Because I find people on this journey, they really are living life more consciously, and they want to take responsibility for their stuff. But if they can work with their four energetic bodies, it makes it much easier to interpret the cue instead of getting overwhelmed by them or wanting to shut down or ignoring them and suppressing them and creating, as you said, dis-ease in the physical body.
Yes, and that's such important work. And there are those four bodies, and like you said, to interpret them, mm-hmm. that's a really great training. So I'm trying to, I'm curious that, going back to what you said, intellectual empaths, and that's interesting when you talk about shapeshifters. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting one. I hadn't heard that. I mean, I'm aware of shapeshifters and all that,
right.
But
when you think about it, some people, I'll give you two examples and it'll make it really easy to understand because some people do this and haven't been aware of it. A first example would be, for example, someone who is an intellectual shapeshifter. Maybe they've never played the game of chess. I know for me, I'm definitely not an intellectual shapeshifter because chess just seems complex. So I couldn't sit across from a chess expert or a chess master and pick up the game quite easily. But an intellectual shapeshifter could because they can follow that train of logic that would be different from their own path of reasoning. Another example of an intellectual shapeshifter, often people who are great teachers do intellectual shapeshifting because they may deliver the same message to each group they're teaching, but they're able to read the group and understand that if they rearrange their words or give different examples, they'll be able to better reach that particular group. The other type of empath that I think is quite interesting and I'm seeing more and more of, and I do believe it's because of the global energetic shifts that are going on, is the environmental empath, which is another type of physical empath that hasn't been spoken about in most of the literature that you do see out there. And I know when the tsunami hit in Japan in March, I was in Vancouver teaching at the Women's Spirituality Celebration there, and several of the empaths got quite ill hours before it was ever on the news that there was something going on. And what they were doing was actually feeling the energetic shifts in the earth, which is fascinating.
Yeah, that is. But they, couldn't they also be picking up emotionally for what's, because there's obviously emotions going on while this is happening to the people who are going through a life and death situation?
That's could they true. Also, they, it depends on how they, again, that's why it's so wonderful to be able to discern what is your sort of primary way of getting the energetic cues. Another example of environmental empaths, I have one lady, she's fabulous. She's a wonderful gardener and does everything organically and magically knows what plants are going to match, what needs to be moved, what the earth needs. And it's because she's merging energetically with the plants and with the earth in the communities that she works in.
Is it merging or is she reading them? Because I see that. I mean, isn't there a difference between reading something and merging with it?
You know, I don't think so. Because, and that's why I think conscious merging is so important. Because if, for example, as a psychic, you were reading someone, you would need to merge. You would need to actually see those fields. Now, the difference is an empath just has, I think, a deeper connection when they're merging with the fields. And often when they're unskilled, they don't know how to get themselves out of the fields. And so that's why in anything that I do, rather than talking about protection, which I think is very fear-based, I talk about perfection and teach people how to fill their own four energetic bodies with themselves. So
yes.
I think the whole question of merging is quite interesting.
Yeah, it is. And, yeah, that the protection actually is about taking care of your own bodies and your own energies. That's exactly what it is. Well, can you tell people how people listening can reach you, what your website is? And
sure. I'd love to connect with people. I'm on Skype at Eagle Spirit Journeys, on Facebook at Eagle Spirit, on Twitter at ES Journeys, or my website. It's easy to get to, and there's lots of information there about Empath 101 and other programs I offer. It's www.eaglespiritjourneys.com.
And do you do any courses online or any way, you know, because you're in a far-off corner of Canada, way across the other side of the continent from me, or is it, do you mainly teach in person?
Well, for example, the Empath 101 program is designed so there's a one-day intensive, and then the rest of the program is a one-month online interactive program, and people get me as a mentor for an entire month, and doesn't matter where they're located. I also work with clients on Skype and travel all over the world teaching programs.
Yes, and Eagle Spirit is going to be in Seattle on February 18th giving her workshop. And so you, too, can learn all about being an empath and how to take care of yourself. If you're wondering if you are an empath, figure out what kind you are. So thank you for being with us today, Eagle Spirit.
Thanks so much, Chris. It was a pleasure.
Yes. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Voices of Women. We'll come back. I'm going to be talking with my second guest, Erica Rayner Horn.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
We are living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host at transformationtalkradio.com.
Women of wisdom.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stanis, and I'm interviewing today Erica Rayner Horn. Erica integrates mindfulness and therapy in her work as a mindfulness-based psychotherapist and is passionate about teaching mindfulness as an effective way to find an inner refuge of stillness and sanity. Well, I like that, sanity. She has taught and presented at hospitals, cancer support groups, and the University of Washington, and is an instructor of the 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course. With more than 30 years of Buddhist meditation, training, and practice, Erica helps everyone discover how mindfulness meditation is a powerful way to wake up to the richness of living a more mindful, relaxed, and joyful life. She is the author of the CD, Finding Tranquility, Guided Mindfulness Meditations for Stressful Times. So welcome, Erica.
Thank you, Chris. It's very nice to be here.
Yes, and I detect an English accent.
Yes, I am from England, but I've lived in America now for more than 30 years.
Well, tell us about how you came to this work on working in mindfulness and meditation work. What led you to have that be as your purpose and life's work?
Well, if I go back to the beginning, I have had a lifelong interest in pursuing the deepest questions of who we are and what it means to be in this realm of what Buddhists refer to as the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. So very early on in my life, I was asking very deep questions and set off on my own spiritual journey, which took me to actually by reading a couple of books on Zen Buddhism in my 20s. I decided to buy a one-way ticket to Japan to go into monastic training and set off to Asia and spent time training in Zen in Kyoto, and then came to America where I continued Zen studies and then actually discovered Tibetan Buddhism and have been practicing in that lineage for many years. So I come from that very varied background, actually beginning with learning meditation and Hinduism, and then through these different streams of Buddhist practice. So that's one side of the answer. The other side is that I've also had a deep, abiding interest in psychology since I read my first psychiatry textbook in college. And I became a therapist early on in England, and now a psychotherapist, and love the alchemy of bringing these two streams of my life together, and am extremely happy to be witnessing this coming together of these many streams and this current interest in mindfulness, which I think is quite wonderful and timely.
Oh, yes, it's so needed. We're all so stressed out and overwhelmed. I'm particularly hearing that. I mean, I go into overwhelm, too, but I meditate a lot, too. So I know the techniques, and yet I still find myself, in overwhelm and stressed out, particularly like this time of year, getting the conference ready. So what was it like for you practicing Zen Buddhism in Japan?
Well, it was quite a wake-up call, Chris. I don't know quite what I expected. I had only read two books on Zen, and my meditation experience at that point was quite limited. And nothing quite prepared me for the austerity of the Zen temple and the training. It was very rigorous training, very, very different, actually, from the way I teach meditation. It was a very harsh encounter with the nature of the mind. And my Zen Roshi was a very wonderful teacher, but I learned a lot. I learned a great deal and have really come to appreciate those days and continue to feel nurtured by them.
Mm-hmm. Well, something I've been aware of is, like, do you find it different in that they have, in Japan, there'd be that Eastern mind, that mindset is a little more in tune with that what you're talking about, that mindfulness or that quiet meditation. The Western mind is a busier mind, and the meditation I do is more of an active meditation.
Yes, yes.
Do you find it?
Excuse me. As actually a lot of the Tibetan Buddhist practices are, there's the initial practices are more about stillness or shine, and then there's an integration with movement. So it's a very complete practice. And mindfulness itself really is the essence of so many spiritual traditions that really came to us, particularly in the West, through the teachings of Thich Nhat Hanh. I think the first book he published was in the 70s, and I actually met him in about 1980 before he was famous, and had a very deep experience of the heartfulness that he brought into the practice. And I think that is partly what is very present now in the West, in different teachers who are teaching mindfulness. Many, many wonderful teachers now. But Thich Nhat Hanh perhaps was the first to really use this term and to embody this heartful presence.
Oh, yeah, I think it's and that's something that's so needed here in the West to be. You know, we think of meditation and mindfulness is up in our head, and to really get to a place of stillness and mindfulness, we have to bring that down to our heart.
Yes. To our heart and into our bodies. I think one of my favorite definitions of mindfulness is present-centered, embodied awareness. Because I believe we as Westerners are particularly disconnected from our bodies. And so a lot of mindfulness practice is about training ourselves to pay attention, to be aware of our bodies and the sensations that we experience, and to really address that cutting offness that we tend to. So it's very much an embodied practice.
Yeah, and talk to us more about that cutting off. You know, what is the cause? Is it because we don't want to feel, we're afraid of our feelings or cutting off our, isn't that kind of about our cutting off our emotions?
Yes, I believe that it is partly that, Chris. I think cutting off our emotions and going into places of denial, that is certainly one aspect. But also, I think just the speediness of our lives, that we have become so very, very busy, and life can feel like one long to-do list. So that tendency to be cut off both from our bodies and from our minds and from our emotions, and to actually go into quite a blur for a lot of our time. It's something about this aspect of mindfulness, of waking up to the full spectrum of being alive in our bodies, in our hearts, and in our emotions.
So what can you tell our audience? What's one key thing you can share that will help them get into that state of mindfulness?
Well, I think we could actually just experience a very brief practice, if you wish, because it is extremely simple. And the way that I teach it, there's an acronym called STOP, which is quite useful to remember. And the first part of this is actually just to stop, or to take a mindfulness pause. This is sometimes called a sacred moment. But just to stop. And if right now you're in a place that you can just be in a relaxed way, to just bring your attention into your body, really feeling what is present, and bringing your attention to your breath and letting your breath be exactly as it is, noticing it, paying attention especially to the breath in the belly. If you can feel that all the way down. And then bringing attention to whatever is arising in thoughts and emotions. Just bringing a very kind, open attitude of letting it be as it is. So the STOP stands for S for the stopping, and T for take a breath, the O for observing, and the P for either proceeding or taking a break, parking. So the elements of this practice are recognizing and allowing, and being with. So when we take a mindfulness pause, it's an opportunity to just be with ourselves in a very open, curious, allowing, kind way.
So I'm going to review that. So stop is to stop, take a moment. T is take a breath. Well, I missed what the O was.
The O is observe.
Observe. Okay, great.
Observe.
And P for perceiving.
Yes. P for proceed, meaning, okay, I have completed my mindfulness pause. I'll now continue with my conversation or my work or whatever it was I was doing. It can also be seen as park, which might be, it might be good for me not to continue that conversation right now. It might be rather good to do something different and actually take a longer pause, take a walk instead.
Okay, so you are kind of, I heard perceive, but you said proceed, but it is kind of perceiving what to do next. You can either go forward or you assess and go, oh, I should be doing something else right now.
Yes, exactly. And what I love about mindfulness practice is it's really something we can integrate into every aspect of our life. So it's particularly useful when we are stressed or when we're in difficulty or physical or emotional pain. But it's also very helpful practice to just open up our experience of being alive in the moment. Because when we really pay deep attention to what's happening in our minds, we're very often living in our past. Reliving memories, we're going over what has already happened again and again, or we're rehearsing and strategizing our future. Mindfulness is about coming back into this present moment and being here with whatever is arising and bringing this kindness, allowing, accepting as best we can.
Yes, so we're going to come back to that. This is Chris Stainis on Voices of Women. We'll return our conversation with Erica Rayner-Horn.
Have you ever wanted to join a yoga class, yet felt self-conscious or simply didn't have the time? Now you can bring live Kundalini yoga into your home with KRI-certified Dr. Ann Taylor. You will learn a scientific technology of movement, mantra, meditation, and breathing techniques designed to balance your mind, body, and spirit. Sign up today for our free newsletter and receive your first class free. Visit Ann with an E, Taylor.com.
Are you at a crossroads? Feeling stuck? I'm Karen Hager, the Fog City Psychic. My gift is helping people who are in transition receive spirit-led guidance about their next steps. I offer private sessions via phone or Skype, intuitive development classes, and much more. Please visit my website, fogcitypsychic.com, to find out how I can help you move out of the fog.
Optimize your breast cancer screening without any radiation or pain. Effective, sensitive, and widely used thermal imaging in Europe is now available to you here in the U.S. Using state-of-the-art FDA-approved camera, Eastside's first and only breast thermography clinic is now open in Bellevue. Safe, sensitive, low cost, no referrals needed. Contact Holistic Medical Center at 425-451-0404 or on the web, drdarvish.com.
Back to Voices of Women. This is Chris Stainis, and I'm talking to Erica Rayner Horn today. Erica, can you give your contact information? You have a website or an email where people can reach you?
Yes, I do. My website is www.mindful-therapy.net, and my email is erica@mindful-therapy.net. And on my website, you will also see that I have a newsletter, which goes out periodically, in which I focus on different topics of mindfulness. So I have done, done issues on mindful eating and mindfulness and self-compassion, mindfulness and research. There's a lot of very interesting neuroscience research at present. And so on. So that can be accessed on the homepage of my website.
Well, great. And you also have your CD there. Is that available on your website?
Yes. Yes, it is. The CD is also available on my website, and it is on Amazon. And may I say something about the CD?
Sure.
The CD is interesting because it arose from my work with cancer patients, and I have been going for some time to teach mindfulness meditation to cancer support groups and hospitals and different centers. And each of these different support groups started asking me the same question, which was, why is there no recording of these meditations? And one day I had a particularly difficult group with someone who had been diagnosed just a few days earlier with a very serious brain tumor. And this person was understandably extremely distressed. And I think I led the shortest meditation that I had to date, under 5 minutes. And this person was the one who said, "That's not good enough. I need a recording to go home with." And I went home and started the recording. And that's the history of the CD. It came about from those requests.
Well, speaking of that, I'd like to talk some more about the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, because I think that's, you know, contributes so much even to our illnesses and the cancers and the health issues that we're facing are often stress based. So, what is your stress reduction program?
The program is the 8-week program that Jon Kabat-Zinn created more than 30 years ago. It's been very well researched, and there is a great deal of information now about the benefits of the program. What I love about it is that it's so accessible and so simple. And the people that come to the class are from every walk of life and every age. I've had 15-year-old schoolgirl to an 80-year-old retired bank manager, and pregnant ladies, and people who are currently undergoing quite serious illness in cancer treatment or other illnesses. And I'm finding that regardless of where people come from, the tools that we learn are very, very accessible and very helpful. There can be an immediate sense of relief, of coming back into one's center, that deepens as the practices become more integrated. So it's a great delight to see, as the 8 weeks unfold, how this plays out in people's lives, and as they share about how they're working with their tendency to drink too much when they're stressed, or their road rage when someone cuts them off, their issues at work with their bosses, difficulties with their children. And people bring back into the class their experience of using mindfulness in their lives. And the class ends towards the end with a day of mindfulness practice, which is primarily a day of silent practice. And that's the time it often all comes together for people. And there's an aha experience as we go through the seated meditation, the walking meditation, the yoga, the body scan. And there's also poetry that I read throughout the day. And then we have a mindful, silent lunch. And often it's that pause that's quite powerful for people. I had someone in my last class, a young woman, who, when I had requested that nobody use their iPhones and check their messages during the day, this young woman reported in the sharing circle that was the most difficult thing for her. And it happened to be raining that day, and she spent the 20 minutes of free time just sitting, looking out at the rain, and saying that that was the most peaceful and beautiful experience of her day. So there are moments like that. There's some very heartful sharing that happens.
Yeah, I think we are so busy that we it's interesting that we need a training on mindfulness, because we're so busy we don't have the time.
Indeed, indeed. And that is very much what happens as we do take the time. And we actually slow down enough to come back home to ourselves. There's such a strong sense of being disconnected from who we really are. And mindfulness practice is this opportunity to open our minds and open into a more spacious experience of being fully alive in the present moment.
That's true. There's I believe that we have that when we do take that time. We then move into that next segment of what that to-do list goes much smoother and easier than if we just kept at it. Well, thank you, Erica, for being here today. I want everybody to know she will be at the conference on February 18th for her workshop, which is called Wake Up to Mindfulness, Fully Present, Fully Alive. So I'd like to leave everyone with this thought today. Listen to what your body is telling you and appreciate the wisdom your body has. Take time to be mindful this weekend. Take time for yourself and meditate. Good way to reduce the stress in your life. So let's take those mindful moments that Erica is suggesting that we do. This is Chris Stainis. I'm glad to have shared this hour with you on Voices of Women. Next week, I'll be interviewing more people that are becoming to Women of Wisdom. If you would like to contact me, you can email me at wow@womenofwisdom.org. We also have a Facebook page. Just look up womenofwisdom.org. And I'm the author of the Amazon bestseller and award-winning book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. You can purchase the book on our website, www.womenofwisdom.org. It's also available on Amazon, but it helps Women of Wisdom. We're a nonprofit organization. It definitely helps us if you purchase through our website. And you can also sign up for our newsletter and find out about our monthly events happening in Seattle and also find out about our conference. New things will be posted soon as we go along. We're developing, getting our brochure ready, so things will be putting up on our website. Every week there'll be something new going up on our website. So I want to hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, and thank you for tuning in to Voices of Women.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today. Radio with Chris Stainis.